There's a certain mountain that exists in central Hokkaido. A young couple once visited the mountain to go climbing, but there was an accident and they went missing. The police conducted an investigation, but they couldn't find any clues. To this day, nobody knows what happened to them. There's a rumor, however, that Gomiko-san haunts this mountain. She suddenly appears if you're walking around late at night. She chases after you, screaming, "You threw me away!" If she catches you, she cuts off all of your limbs, gouges out your eyes, puts you into a garbage bag, and then carries you away. She chases you with inhuman speed. No matter how hard you try to run away, you'll always get caught. If you ever encounter her by yourself, there's no way to escape. However, if you're with two or more people, you can split up and try to run in different directions, leaving one person to become a sacrifice, while everyone else has a chance to escape. Hey guys, this is your host Tara A. Devlin, and welcome to another episode of Koobana, True Japanese Scary Stories from Around the Internet. Did you catch the little Japanese pun in that first story? Gomi in Japanese means rubbish or trash, and the ko is a common female name suffix. So her name basically means trash woman, and she deals with people by cutting them up and putting them in the trash. Welcome to the world of Japanese monsters. So on this week's episode, we're going to be looking at a few other mysterious beings that people have come across in villages across Japan. Our first story comes from a businessman who meets another new recruit at employee training for his new job. But he soon realizes that something isn't quite right with him. When the man begins to tell his story, he realizes there's much more going on than meets the eye. Find out what happens in Yorikata-sama. This is a story I heard from A, someone who was staying in the same room as me during our company's new employee training when I first started work. Every night he had terrible nightmares that woke me up. So I asked him about it and he jokingly told me the following. It might be fake, but something that happened recently made me remember it. A was a graduate from a university in Tokyo and a new recruit to our company, but he was born in N Prefecture. His family home was way out in the countryside. His mother was very superstitious, and he heard many stories from her over the years. The one he heard the most was about a yokai named Yorikata-sama. To summarize, there was a land beneath the mountains near their home, and that land was where Yorikata-sama lived. A's family home was surrounded by mountains, and there were several caves they called Hitowana, which is a cave formed by volcanoes where people once lived. The most famous caves were enshrined as Shinto shrines. They were probably something like a power spot, I guess. One of those places that people think is full of mystical energy. So, one of these caves was called Hebiana, snake hole, and it led to the place where Yorikata-sama and his friends lived. And so, people were warned that if they came across these caves in the mountains, they were to stay away. A had no idea what Yorikata-sama was, but his mother warned him at every opportunity. If you keep making noise late into the night, Yorikata-sama will come for you. This somewhat scared him. Time passed and A started going to university in Tokyo, and he joined the ski club. During the winter break of his second year, he and three friends started talking about staying at his place for the holidays. There was a lot of heavy snowfall where A was from, and a ski resort nearby, so it was perfect for them to go and have a ski camp there. The entire holidays they did nothing but ski. But of course, even they got tired of just skiing every day. So on New Year's Eve, they hung out at A's house instead. They got sick of the specials on TV and had run out of things to talk about. So, against his better judgment, A decided to tell his friends the story of Yorikata-sama. The TV was boring and they had nothing to do. So they started talking about finding the Hebiana as a test of courage. "No, it's too dangerous," A refused. There were several superstitions about the mountains surrounding his home, but in particular, there was one that stated that it is forbidden to enter the mountains during New Year's Eve. This wasn't unique to A's hometown. In N Prefecture, there were apparently a lot of superstitions that involve it being forbidden to enter the mountains on a particular day. But his friends were really excited, and A didn't want to dampen the mood. So in the end, they decided to go looking for the Hebiana. It's different when you're a child, but A himself never really believed in Yorikata-sama anyway. He thought the story was just made up to keep children from carelessly approaching the caves, so they didn't run into bears or anything. There were several caves in the mountains that the local folk warned people not to go near, so A tried to guess from which among them might be the Hebiana. They decided to go check out a few of the guesses and off they went. However, once they reached the mountain, A was overcome with a sense of unease. He played there often as a child, and had climbed it many times over. But this time it felt like he was straying into unknown territory, like he was seeing it for the first time. It was the first time A had ever gone to the mountains at nighttime, and as he shone the torch on the dark mountain path, he felt out of place. He had to force himself to continue. Even as his muscles froze and he felt awful, A and his friends went around the different caves. He seemed to be the only one who felt it, as his friends carried on excitedly, so he was unable to stop. The first and second caves were just tiny, only about 5 meters in length each. At the third one, they found what they were looking for. The cave suddenly slanted upwards, like a cliff, and the four of them tried to climb it. The cave entrance itself could be seen from the bottom of the slope, but it apparently just looked like an ordinary cave. It wasn't until they went further inside that they realized something was wrong. First was the smell. There were several arrowheads scattered around the entrance. Many of them stuck into the corpses of frogs. The smell of their decomposing bodies was overwhelming. His three friends, B, C, and D, were like, "Ugh, gross," and laughed about it. But A was already freaking out, and his knees were shaking. Noticing that so many dead frogs and arrowheads scattered around was strange, B said, "Isn't this a little off?" A agreed with him, but C and D made a show of barging in and went straight into the cave. A and B followed them, little by little. The cave was rather deep, about 10 meters long, and wide enough for two people to stand shoulder to shoulder to walk through. Further in, they found even more arrowheads and frog corpses littering the ground. They could all tell by looking at each other's faces that they were scared, but being a test of courage, no one dared to be the first to suggest leaving. They continued on. At the end of the cavern was another hole, this one leading down into another section of the cave. The hole was just larger than a human head, meaning that they would just barely fit inside. About 1 meter before the hole, there stood two stone pillars, one on either side, which were connected by a shimenawa, a rope used to cordon off consecrated areas, or ward against evil. As A shone the torch over it and saw the familiar white zigzag pieces of paper on the shimenawa, he let out a scream. Of course, the four of them had seen shimenawa used at shrines before, but whether it was for good or bad reasons, it was not something to mess with lightly. Everyone fell silent, and the air grew heavy. "What are we gonna do?" someone said. But then C, who in general was not the sharpest tool in the shed, said, "We can't just go home like this." "I told you, this is dangerous. Seriously, this is not good." "What are you saying? There's shimenawa at the shrine near my house. It's nothing." "I'm telling you, it's dangerous."
"What? Are you scared?"
"If we just take a photo with our phones, it should be fine, right?"
"Huh?
I mean... Alright, let's do that." "Okay, you do it. Go ahead."
"You want me to do it? You do it."
In the end, D freaked out and refused to go, so C went. He stepped over the shimenawa and walked towards the hole. He shone the torch down it, and the moment he took a picture, something inside moved. C screamed and fell back to the rope. The remaining three ran to see what scared him, and they all locked eyes with it. What they saw on the other end of the torch was dry, like a mummy. It had brown skin with a human-like face, but it had no eyes or mouth, only black, gaping holes where its eyes should be. It crawled out of the hole towards them. Dumbfounded, the four of them stood there, looking at it. A then realized that it was Yorikata-sama. The body beneath the mummy-like face was a long, snake-like body with a twisted tail that split in two. The four of them froze for just a moment before screaming and running from the cave. A glanced over his shoulder just once, but the creature just stared at them from behind the shimenawa and made no attempt to go past it. Even though it was dark and he couldn't see the creature's face very well, A felt like it was grinning at him somehow. They scuttled out of the cave, and from there, A said their memories were vague. Before they knew it, they were standing in front of his house. According to his mother, she saw the four of them wandering around outside with pale faces. She called out to them, but no one responded. They just slowly made their way inside. A thought that perhaps it had all been a dream, but everyone remembered being at the cave and seeing that snake person. There's no way they could have all had the same dream. The four friends were dispirited. No longer feeling the urge to ski, everyone returned to Tokyo the next day. After that, C, who had crossed over the shimenawa to get close to the hole, started having nightmares every night of Yorikata-sama. They seemed so real that he became emotionally distressed. And right around the time he should have been graduating university and finishing his job search, he stopped going. A short while after that, A started having strange dreams. In the dream, both his arms had been cut off by a hatchet or something. His legs were broken, and he was being dropped down that hole they saw behind the Shimenawa. Perhaps because his arms had been cut off, he slid through the hole without trouble. It was quite deep, and he woke up before hitting the bottom. I remember seeing A mutter that he would be next, and it scared me. Of course, A himself was also concerned, and asked his family about this Yorikata-sama. His grandfather passed away when he started elementary school, and his grandmother when he started high school, and neither of his parents knew much about it either. He said to the locals that it was important for his cultural anthropology class at university, and went around asking about Yorikata-sama. But other than the temple monk and a few much older folk, no one knew much of anything. But this is what he did find out. In A's village in the past, there was a snake religion. Or rather, there still was. There were a lot of shrines. This god had his arms plucked off, became a snake, and escaped to N Prefecture, where he became an indigenous god. There were several fairy tales set in the region near A's hometown that involved a young man being dropped into the hole to the underworld below, where he became a snake and made his way back up to the surface again. Now, there were several other names besides Yorikata-sama, such as Saburo-sama and Minakata-sama. So, what A was seeing in his dreams was probably some type of ritual. Oh yeah, and in addition to the above fairy tales, he also said that there was a version where someone chosen by the snake lost their arms and was called Yorikata-sama, the one who's chosen. Lately, his dreams have been getting longer, and he said he's started to see what happens after he hits the ground. There are lots of other people in there just like him, the Yorikata-sama, all crawling around. They're being guided somewhere, but he hasn't seen the end of the dream yet, so he doesn't know where exactly. Once I see the end, I think what happened to C will happen to me. Having said that, A fell silent, but honestly, the whole time he was grinning and telling the story like it was one big joke. So, I think it's all fake. He's one of those guys who likes to joke and mess around. I mean, for someone who was in a panic, he sure remembered a lot of the finer details of this Yorikata-sama. Even the stories about his dreams just stink of fairy tale ripoffs. Plus, what on earth happened to B and D? But then, the other day we had some company training in Tokyo, and A wasn't there. According to someone in the same branch as him, he's been suffering from autonomic dysfunction and quit work. Hearing that, I remembered the story he told me and began to wonder. What if? Forum users who read this story tracked the original fairy tale down to that of Koga Saburo, a man who turned into a giant snake after his journey into the underworld. His full name was Koga Saburo Yorikata, and the caves the story took place in were located on the border of Nagano Prefecture, the so-called N Prefecture in the story. After finding his way back to the surface and receiving help from monks to regain his human form, Saburo became Suwa Myōjin, the god of the upper shrine of Suwa. Another name he's known by is Takeminakata no Kami, just like the three names listed in the story. Is it possible that Saburo is still down there to this day? Our last story for this week features a young woman who goes to visit her boyfriend's house in the countryside. She sees a beautiful woman wearing a gorgeous kimono, but the villagers seem to treat her harshly. What's really going on behind the scenes of this idyllic, peaceful little village? Find out in A Beautiful Girl Came Out of the Shed. This happened at a mountain near my ex-boyfriend's house. It was really strange, so I'd like to tell you about it. My ex-boyfriend lived in a small village somewhere in the Chugoku region. There were about 8 villages in the area in total. Even though they had plumbing that supplied water, it was the type of place where everyone drank water from wells. Both the water and air were beautiful and clear. During autumn, I had a few days off, so my ex took me to see his hometown. When we arrived, everyone came running outside to greet us. "So, this is your girlfriend, hey?" They seemed very nice. There was nothing strange at all about them. There was a house close to the mountain, and at the end of the small path sitting between the rice fields, there was a small shed, the type that keeps farm machinery and such. Anyway, a young woman came out of it. She was incredibly beautiful. She was wearing this beautiful deep crimson kimono. The sleeves were especially fancy. It really suited her. I was fascinated by her, but the villagers started forcing everyone to go home. The young woman cackled and entered the mountainside. I had no idea why she went up the mountain wearing such a kimono. I asked my boyfriend about it, but he wouldn't tell me. So all I could do was try to let it go. Back at his house, he told me lots of stories about the adventures he'd had in the mountains. He seemed rather proud, like he knew exactly what was where. And so the next day he took me there. We went hunting for mushrooms and walked around the mountain streams. Deep in the mountains, we found an open area, and there was a small mound of dirt piled up in the middle. "What's that?" I asked. "Nothing," my boyfriend replied, and turned to leave in the other direction. As he did, I heard that beautiful woman's cackling coming from somewhere. It scared the crap out of me. I wanted to run, but I also wanted to know more about the girl. She was on top of the mound of dirt, laughing and looking at me. When I looked closer, I realized there was something like a well up there. I think it was a well. So, while she was laughing, she turned and spit in the well. Spitting seemed like poor manners to me, and kind of gross, so I went to run, but then I realized my boyfriend was no longer there. The young woman continued to laugh, and then began descending the dirt mound towards me. My heart was pounding furiously in my chest, but I somehow managed to keep a cool head. If I took off running in some direction, I was likely to have an accident, and maybe even die. We were deep in the mountains, and I wasn't exactly sure where I was anyway. I was creeped out by the woman, but perhaps if I asked her, she would take me back to the village. I was so scared I thought my heart would stop, but I slowly approached her. When she saw I was walking towards her, and not running away, she stopped for a moment, with a puzzled look on her face. Ah, so she is just a normal person, I thought, and felt relieved. Excuse me. I got separated from my boyfriend, and I've lost my way. If it's no trouble, would you be able to show me the way back? I asked. She laughed and closed the distance between us. Standing so close, our faces were almost touching. Oh, what am I gonna do if she tries to stab me or something? I thought. But then she said, in a small voice, "You can't be here with me. You'll be abducted. Do you know the way to the stream from here?"
I do, I replied.
She said at this time, people would be coming down the mountain from their charcoal making, so if I followed the stream, I should be all right. She was very lively when she spoke, kind of like a handsome young man. So, against my better judgment, I said, "Can you come with me? I'm scared." "I can't," she said. "I have work to do. You probably shouldn't tell anyone you spoke to me. Go now, and don't turn back." There was nothing else I could do, so I made my way back towards the stream. As I followed it back, I saw smoke in the distance. I went towards it and found a small shack where an old man was making charcoal. He was kind of blunt and scarier than the young woman was, but he helped me back down the mountain towards the village. I asked him about the woman on the way, but he wouldn't tell me much. Just that she had a duty to perform, and that she lived on the mountain serving someone, or something, called Koge.
"You are lucky you weren't called upon, and that you were able to return safely," he said. Apparently this Koge would never appear before men, so we were safe to return to the village together.
"What happened to your boyfriend?"
he asked me just before we got back.
I laughed and told him that he left me behind.
"I told him it was dangerous to come up here," he muttered.
When we got back, I apologized to my boyfriend. He asked me about Koge, but I said I didn't know anything about it. After that, I never saw the young woman again. I returned home and shortly after I broke up with my boyfriend, so I have no idea what happened to her. But it all seemed rather strange. Wouldn't you agree?
So I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode. If there are any other themes or stories you'd like to see in future episodes, you can let me know at koabana.net/podcast. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving a review for it on iTunes. It's super easy,
and you can find the link for it at koabana.net/podcast. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you again next week for even more Koabana, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet.
Want even more scary stories? Head over to koabana.net for new translations every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. You can also join our Patreon for exclusive stories you won't find anywhere else. Head over to koabana.net now.